This podcast is brought to you by Stella Artois. Make every moment unforgettable with Stella Artois. Whether at home with a cozy dinner or dining out, Stella Artois adds a touch of sophistication to any occasion. Stella Artois, a taste worth more. Enjoy responsibly. Welcome to What's Eric Eating, Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandlin. On today's show, we'll talk about some news in the restaurant world, as well as our meal at a couple of restaurants of note. To do that, I'm joined by my co-host this week. She is a former commercial real estate developer and a marketing expert, Monica Dana. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm good, Eric. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for doing this. Let us dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one, Chef Sean Gall is opening his restaurant Camaraderie in the Heights. Described as a, quote, convivial, fine casual neighborhood restaurant inspired by the bonds of friendship, trust, and loyalty that define a strong restaurant team, easy for me to say. We know Sean from his time at Goodnight Hospitality, where he was the executive pastry chef, and he won Pastry Chef of the Year a couple years ago in the Tastemaker Awards. He has also worked at several Michelin-starred restaurants, including Quint, Cezanne, and L2O. Now, Monica, one of the reasons I'm happy to be talking about this with you is that the company you used to work for is leasing this property to Sean. So I know you had some interactions with him as he was preparing to make this decision. So What are your thoughts on Camaraderie? Revive Development. The name comes to me at the end, but yes, Revive Development will be Sean's landlord in the Heights.
That's right. These things take years and years in the making, right? I worked for Revive several years ago, and met Sean actually as we were showing him that property that he eventually ended up leasing. I think came back around to almost a year later, but. If you remember, you and I were seated next to each other. They did a tasting, a preview of Camaraderie. God, this was probably 2 years ago at T-Rex. And that really was my first introduction to what will now, I guess, become Camaraderie. Obviously, we knew Sean as more of, you know, pastry.
And right. We didn't know that he could cook savory until that
night.
None of us had ever had savory food from Sean Gall.
And that was kind of, you know, we were talking with him about the space and he invited us to, you know, we wanted to know more about, you know, the menu. And so he invited us and me and my cousin, and we ended up sitting next to you. And that was our first, you know, introduction to this menu, which we were both pleasantly surprised with. I shouldn't say surprised. It was the savory part of Camaraderie that we were excited to taste. So that was kind of our first introduction to it. And then, you know, watching this project kind of play out, you know, as you had mentioned, you know, my former employer Revive is helping develop that space on 11th Street in the Heights. Really glad he kind of ended up in freestanding kind of single tenant in a neighborhood in the Heights. I think that feels right for someone kind of leaving, you know, Goodnight Hospitality with the accolades that he has, moving into a neighborhood like the Heights with this menu. But I'm excited to see the space. I'm excited to taste the food again. Obviously, with, you know, Goodnight Hospitality's recent conversations around Michelin awards and recognitions, you know, that restaurant group has been in the spotlight somewhat. And you know, no doubt here, stars coming out of that group.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't mean to kind of yada yada his resume of working for Michelin starred resumes, because there really aren't any other chefs in Houston that I am aware of, at least off the top of my head, who have that kind of resume. Like, he's worked at some of the great restaurants in New York and Chicago and California, and he's bringing all of that experience to Camaraderie. And so this is like immediately on the short list of what I expect. Like we're going to have a podcast episode in a couple of weeks where we talk about our picks for the best new restaurants of 2024. When we do that same podcast for 2025, I fully expect that we will be talking about Camaraderie as one of them, you know, whatever else opens, however else that shakes out. So I'm very excited about this. And that, you know, as you mentioned, that dinner at T-Rex was kind of a kind of a preview. It was kind of pitched to mostly the real estate community to kind of showcase what he was capable of. And I remember being very impressed. Like, I don't remember all of the specifics, and I don't even want to cite specific dishes because who knows? Like, his whole, you know, some of those ideas could have evolved or changed since then. But it demonstrated that he's a very talented guy. And, you know, we're sort of lucky that he met his wife here in Houston, and that they like Houston. She's got a great job in the medical field. And because he could have gone anywhere. I mean, he could have taken camaraderie to any other city in this country and been warmly received. And so that they've chosen Houston for that is exciting and is like another feather in our culinary cap, as it were.
Well, and I'll say too, side note, anyone I've ever talked to about Sean, I don't know him that well, just in the, you know, premise of showing him a space and eating his food, has such a reputation of just being a nice guy, which, you know, call it what you want, but I'm always kind of rooting for nice guys.
Yeah. And he's, I mean, he's very sort of community minded. I mean, he's a cyclist and he's done a lot of fundraising for No Kid Hungry, like through his interest in cycling. So, you know, when he talks about, you know, this culture of community and respect that he's hoping to cultivate, you know, I think this is going to be, you know, from an employee's perspective, I think this is going to be a good place to work because I think you'll be treated really well. They're talking about paying everybody the same wage to kind of even out that the discrepancy between what servers make because they're tipped versus what cooks make because they're not.
Yeah.
So I think that'll be interesting. And then, you know, I think it'll just be exciting to kind of see what he comes up with, because as you said, this has been at least a couple of years in the planning and it's finally a little more imminent. Like, we should see this. I mean, I don't know exactly. And they're saying early 2025. So hopefully by, you know, February or March, like, we're all eating at camaraderie.
Well, and I will say, and I can't remember who it was, I'm sure after this airs, someone's going to message me, but I was having a conversation with someone who lives on the same street, which is Ashland, on the corner of Ashland and 11th in the Heights, that his property is being developed on. And they are actually on a cycle team with Sean. That's how they met him. And he was kind of telling me, and I forget who it was, it'll come to me, about how the neighbors on that street, they're kind of mixed. It's a mixed bag, right? And this is happening a lot in the Heights from a real estate perspective. It was like, yeah, they want kind of restaurants to come in. They're worried about the traffic of, you know, restaurants on their residential street. But, you know, when I was talking to this person, I was like, you know, I bet Sean is the kind of person that, you know, will reach out to those neighbors. They want to be a neighborhood place. I mean, he's going to be a good steward of that space, and that he wants those neighbors to come walk down and that to be their neighborhood restaurant. So I think it's a good fit for him location wise. Yeah, I think most people probably assumed he'd end up in Montrose just because of, you know, Goodnight. But I'm excited to see what he does with the space and what he does with the menu.
Yeah, you know, and just the one other thing I just want to sort of touch on briefly is that over the last couple of years, like, we have kind of seen more ambitious chef-oriented kind of restaurants opening in the Heights. Now, obviously, you know, Squabble opened in 2019 and that kind of kicked things off. But, you know, just in the last couple of years, right, June opened up, Basso opened up at the very end of 2023, Agnes and Sherman, Nick Wong's new Asian American diner concept is coming to the former Alice Blue space on 19th. And I kind of see camaraderie as like another, you know, like another marker in this trend, or however you want to phrase it.
Yeah.
And I do think that it's, you know, as you said, like, in a different era, you know, 5 years ago, all of these restaurants probably would have been in Montrose, and that, you know, the Heights is kind of shedding that reputation for only being, you know, casual, family friendly. Cultivare was kind of the most you could hope for.
Yeah.
In terms of being kind of more adult oriented. But that, you know, the Heights restaurant scene is really kind of maturing and evolving. And it really is one of the very premier dining neighborhoods in Houston.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
All right, let's move on to topic number two. A new healthy eating restaurant is coming to the River Oaks Shopping Center. It is called Honest Mary's. It comes from Austin, where they have four or five locations. They have claimed the current La Madeleine space right there in the heart of the River Oaks Shopping Center for their first Houston location. They are known for their healthy bowls and an all gluten-free menu. I want to talk about Honest Mary's for a minute or two. But before we do that, we don't know exactly when that La Madeleine will close, only that it is happening. So are you going to miss the La Madeleine in River Oaks?
I'm not going to miss the La Madeleine River Oaks only because I cannot remember the last time I went to the La Madeleine in River Oaks. There's closer ones to me. But no, I think that as with most concepts that come out of Austin, I think Houston's always a little skeptical. Bring us your healthy concepts, which they do well, right? I think they've got a good handle on that kind of vegetable forward kind of health food that we don't. So no, not going to miss La Madeleine, but looking forward to kind of a modern take on the upgrade of Fast Healthy.
Yeah, I think that's right. But I did want to acknowledge the La Madeleine because it's been around. I mean, I think I've been eating there not very often, but going back to high school or maybe even before, which means it's been in the neighborhood for a very long time. And I think, there's going to be some people who are a little bit disappointed that they're going to have to go all the way to Meyerland for their tomato basil soup and, croque monsieur or whatever. But yeah, I'm intrigued by Honest Mary's. I think, the contrast, of course, is with Picnic, which was another Austin-based gluten-free kind of healthy eating concept that opened and closed really quickly in the Montrose Collective. And that was full service, and this is counter service. And I think that's going to make all the difference in the world. I mean, if you look at the success of Flower Child, obviously that seems like the most obvious point of comparison. And I think if Honest Mary's can do something kind of similar where, it's a lower price point, it's a little more approachable. And that neighborhood, I think, is well-suited, right? If you look at the success of Vibrant and kind of what they're doing, this does seem like a good fit for the area.
Yeah, no, I've never been in Austin, so I am just looking online and seeing what I hear from friends. But I think that Flower Child probably sounds like a good comparison, and I do like Flower Child, so let's do it.
All right, let's move on to topic number three. This was sort of circulating a couple of weeks ago, but we're going to be dealing with the ramifications of the I-45 expansion project or relocating for, I don't know, probably the next 10 years or something. And word is circulating that Kim San, the staple Chinese and Vietnamese restaurant, their downtown location on Jefferson Street, is going to have to close eventually. It's not entirely clear when. It may not even be until 2026. But this is a building that's been open since the early 90s. And so I think it's worth noting that we're going to see a lot of disruption in that kind of Edo area centered around this freeway project.
Yeah. And look, we've been hearing about this for 10 years. what it feels like 10 years, at least. I mean, maybe just from a real estate community perspective, but the company that I used to work for, Revive, had been asked a lot of times to come to kind of look at East End and East Downtown for, revitalization projects. And, we had been hearing about this, so we kind of didn't look at that area until it settled out. First that came to us was, Toot Suite. It was like, this is probably 5 years ago, right? We have to move. Eventually this is going to be expanded, which now we know that they're moving and that's going to happen. So, these weren't things that we didn't see coming 5 years ago. Doesn't mean it makes it any easier when some of these staples are closing. I mean, Kim Sun, Wynn, which you mentioned, are these all up on the chopping block? I mean, part of, expanding east of downtown, I mean, in the Houston real estate, right? You go north, you go west, you got south. I mean, east is kind of like the last frontier for us. I mean, then we fall off into the Gulf of Mexico. So I think watching what's happened to the immediate east, and I'm talking like Navigation, I'm talking, Vinny's and all those areas that will eventually be disrupted. I think we gave it a good go with the last 15 years to 10 years, but that's going to expand as well. I mean, think about Warehouse Live and those developments that really came over there on St. Emmanuel started 20 years ago, we're going to see shakeup. We're going to see things. We're now coming into kind of in what I feel like is the second phase of that. And like, what's that going to look like for the next 20 years?
Right. And we don't know because we don't really know like how long this project's going to take. We don't know, it's not supposed to affect sort of St. Emmanuel and East. It's supposed to be sort of in between the freeway and St. Emmanuel. But as you mentioned, I mean, that puts Wynn in the path, that staple Houston Vietnamese restaurant that's kind of on that short list of places to take people, especially if they're visiting from out of town and staying downtown and they're looking for Vietnamese food. But and before we go big picture, I do just want to talk about Kim San for just a minute or two, because, you know, this it's a little like Mize, right? Like for a lot of people, a lot of Houstonians of that are our age, this was the first restaurant where you had, you know, Vietnamese spring rolls or bo luc lac or, you know, dishes like that, or, you know, the Vietnamese fajitas with the grilled beef and the rice paper, and you kind of rolled it yourself. Like just a really smart adaptation of a Vietnamese dish to the Houston palate. You know, I have memories of going, they used to do a lunch buffet on the second floor in the ballroom in the 90s that I ate with my late father many times. That was one of his favorite lunch spots. And it was such a deal. I mean, this is, you know, two heaping portions of, you know, like General Tso's chicken and Kung Pao chicken, you know, plus rice, plus an egg roll. And it was like less than $10, you know, you could absolutely feast back in the day. And since I live in that area, Kim San is still a go-to for me. I mean, when I want an easy dinner, you know, a large wonton soup and an order of grilled beef spring rolls, I mean, that's a really convenient option for me. Yeah. So, you know, I'll certainly enjoy this. I'll certainly enjoy patronizing Kim San for as long as we have it. And then I'll be sad about it when it's gone. And they've talked about maybe finding another location nearby. And I hope that happens, because it has been that downtown staple for more than 30 years at this point.
Yeah, no, same. It's a good point. I mean, I think that thinking of, you know, our more closer modern history with Vietnamese food, at least for our community, that's really what you kind of think of as your first introduction. And you and I both being kind of lifelong Houstonians, even though we've been kind of growing up eating Vietnamese food, that was really kind of like the place, the staple. It's palatial, right? It looks like a palace. It's huge, you know? And I think too, and I won't speak for the Vietnamese community, but I feel like that, you know, even the banquet hall, and, you know, I've been to many weddings there and graduations, and, you know, that kind of being that place on the east side of downtown where, you know, that's where we would go to experience those things, seems like a special place.
Right. The upstairs banquet hall has been the host of, I mean, so many weddings and other family celebrations. And it's just so strange, because there used to be sort of many Kim Sans, right? There was one on Westheimer, there was one out in Stafford. And when this closes, I'll be down to just the Chinatown location, which is, you know, kind of a strange setback for, again, this like iconic restaurant brand that kind of started in the 80s, expanded in the 90s and the early 2000s. And is, if you've been living in Houston for a long time, is like one of those go-tos. So it'll be very strange not to have it on Jefferson Street.
Yep. No, I agree. And I mean, we briefly mentioned Wynn, which should be no brief mention, but, you know, I guess now that Linda Salinas moved to LA, probably their number one customer is left. So maybe they can relocate.
our friend Tyler Horn would like a word in terms of being the number one customer for Wynn, because it seems like half the time I text him, he's on his way. He's either there or has just left. But I think we'll just sort of keep a good thought that the owners of Wynn are kind of paying attention and are exploring their options, and that just like Toot Sweet and just like Neil's Bar and even True Anomaly Brewing, they'll find a new location slightly further east, you know, or, you know, Wynn would do me an incredible favor if they would just come to either, Midtown or Third Ward. That'd be great to keep it somewhere close by.
Well, and look, real estate brokers have been all over these properties for the past 5 years. I mean, ever since this was announced, I'm sure they're crawling with opportunities to relocate. So I would say if they're going to relocate, they've got some options available, and they're not going to just close.
All right. Monica, I'm going to say that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurants of the week. Stick around. Monica, Monica, for our restaurants of the week, I want to talk to you about Leo's River Oaks. This is the new kind of steakhouse supper club from Culinary Concepts. That is the company behind State Fair, Liberty Kitchen, and most importantly for our conversation, the renovated River Oaks Theater. It is led by Chef Tim Redding, who I met when he was operating a stand at Bravery Chef Hall, but who also ran GJ Tavern for Chris Shepherd for a little while. And prior to that, worked for Hugo Ortega at Caracol. So I say all that to say to you, what did you think about our meal at Leo's River Oaks? Kind of start with like your initial impressions, decor, atmosphere, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I loved our experience at Leo's. And I'll sum up, and I'll get into the detail, but I'll sum up for the listeners what I said to you almost within 10 minutes of you sitting down. It was really what I wanted Turner's Cut to be when I went to Turner's Cut, right? And so for me, decor-wise, I mean, just a beautifully not overdone sort of Art Deco nod, but a modern version of this with, you know, some gold wallpaper, some alcoves for booths. Just not over the top, which I feel like a lot of restaurants in the past couple of years that are kind of on that higher upper echelon, kind of luxury restaurant, high end, really are looking for wow factor. You know, I think of things like Toca Madera and Marigold Club. This felt very River Oaks's version of that, where it was understated enough to feel elegant. The sound and the lighting, which are two huge things for me, were just kind of nailed. I think they did such a good job at making you feel like you were in a busy, buzzing room, but conversation was easy. It wasn't too loud. You know, it felt intimate enough to where, you know, you're in a shopping center, one of the most, you know, recognizable shopping centers in Houston, the River Oaks Center, and you're next door to a beautifully renovated, you know, movie theater. And I just had a really good feeling walking in there. The bar was kind of off to the side, and it you know, smallish, intimate bar, which felt like, you know, could go and sit down and have drinks and, you know, have your own menu items there. But I just felt the dining room itself felt cozy. It felt like I wanted to stay. And I didn't have that experience at other kind of higher end, even steakhouses that I've visited this year.
No, I think that's all very well said. I think it does have that, you know, when you talk about Turner's Cut, you know, not that we had a fantastic meal at Turner's
Absolutely.
Cut.
Absolutely. Yes.
But the room feels a little bit cold, right? It's super high ceilings because it's in that development. It's the walls are all white. Like it's beautiful in its way, but it just feels a little bit cold. And Leo's is, it's dark. It's like, it's a little, it feels a little smaller, mm-hmm. even though I don't necessarily think it has fewer seats, but it's just, you know, there's like all these like kind of little sections of the dining room. And so it feels more intimate and, you know, it's maybe the best version of live music, like a piano player,
yeah.
Of any restaurant I've been to recently, in the sense that like the songs were familiar. Like if you could sort of lean in and be like, oh, that's a Beatles song.
Oh yeah, you kept guessing the songs. So I remember that.
Yeah, you know, you could sort of figure out what he was playing, but it wasn't obtrusive. Yeah. You know, it just kind of added to the atmosphere.
And Beatles and some Coldplay and.
yeah, it's not designed to be.
It wasn't the center point. Yeah, good point on the music. I think that really did kind of add. And I think they have, you know, live musician there, what, like Wednesday through Sunday, most nights.
Yeah, I think that's right.
But, and a good happy hour as well. But it made me feel like that's what kind of dining in like the 30s and 40s in River Oaks felt like in Houston. You know, it just felt like it didn't feel super CNBC, but it could be, but it wasn't trendy. It just felt comfortable. And as opposed to kind of Turner's Cut, which again, the food was fantastic we had at Turner's Cut, but it just felt opulent for sure, but a little more sterile on the interior. The seating at Leo's, I feel like we were comfortable. I mean, it was kind of couch and nice textures and materials. We haven't talked about the food, but it just arriving there, it felt, like it had been there a long time. It didn't feel like it was new, brand new and showy and trying to be on everyone's Instagram. It just felt very understated and comfortable. And I definitely will be back.
Yeah. It doesn't have that kind of exuberant atmosphere of a Tocamadera or a Drake's Hollywood. Yeah. It's a little calmer. It's a little more subtle. So, maybe not the place where you'd get a big group of friends together for a birthday, but that more intimate kind of date night or a business dinner or, that kind of occasion,
Yeah. 25th anniversary promotion. I mean, it was definitely felt like an occasion type celebration, six or less people, some beautiful booths that they had, kind of curated and just had a really good feeling.
All right. So let's talk about the menu. What were some of your favorite dishes from our meal at Leah's River Oaks?
Well, their crudo menu, first of all, was kind of the first thing that I noticed, which is a separate menu. And, I'm a big raw food fan. So the crudo menu, which we had Seafood Tower to start off with, which big fan of oysters they brought us. There was obviously crab on there. They had several crudos that we tried.
A tuna tartare, and then that salmon crudo with the crunchy, whatever that was on top of that was really tasty.
Yeah. And I think we kind of made we tried a lot, by the way. We tried a lot of the menu. And I think we said at the end, maybe we come back and just have the seafood tower and a steak and we'd be great. And maybe one of the pastas. But it tended to be one of my favorite things we had was the seafood tower and the crudos. I think that, Tim kind of tipped his hat at the beginning and said, I'm going to give you some of our, most popular dishes. And I'm glad we let them kind of curate that journey because I think everything that he sent out at the beginning of that kind of raw portion was just nailed it.
Yeah. And one of the other highlights was that butternut squash risotto with the pumpkin. It's like a very, very much fall flavors. And, I've learned kind of over the years that like really traditional Italian risotto where it's like properly al dente is crunchy to my palate and not how I like to eat risotto.
Yeah.
So I like it a little softer and that's where this was. It wasn't overcooked. It wasn't mushy by any stretch of the imagination, but it had that kind of like soft, warm, those like warm spices, very fall, very comforting.
Yeah. No, that was one of my favorites too.
And then of course we had a steak, which was, all good things. Like Tim is sourcing really great beef and, they don't screw it up, right? They get a good sear on it. They cook it medium rare. It's a really nice cut of beef. And it's the kind of place where, if you're going to spend a lot of money on a steak, like you want it, that's what you want. You want great beef cooked right. But the real highlight for me, I think, was that mushroom agnolotti because, I mean, Tim did a cavatelli at George James or GJ Tavern that I really enjoyed. But to see him kind of lean more into that pasta making, I know that's a passion for him and to get such a good version of it at Leo's was really nice.
I think that was the standout for me. I mean, besides the seafood tower, I mean, that mushroom angolotti really just stood out. It was very special. Days later, that's what I was thinking about too. I had several people ask me even while we were there, what is that? What is that? How was it? And I just said, do not miss this dish. It was probably my favorite thing that we tasted all night and we tasted, I don't know, 20 dishes.
Yeah, they fired. Yeah, we were there as their guests and Tim was very generous and completely crushed us with food. I'm looking back through my pictures of dessert, it was a carrot cake, but the one that stood out for me was the apple millefeuille, which is kind of like a French apples and puff pastry. Like instead of doing tarte tatin, this is like a tower, right? A taller, more visually striking dish.
It's a vertical dessert.
Yeah. But, anytime we kind of get into fall, apple desserts that's just kind of where your brain goes. And so to have one on the menu, particularly, one with like the caramel and the crunch and everything, it was very delicious.
Yeah. We had a really good lobster thermidor. Remember that?
Yeah. And what I've learned is that I like my lobster kind of simple. I figured this, like, Like I think the lobster thermidor was properly executed, but in the crush of like so many other dishes, it didn't stand out much for me. So like, give me either like a steamed lobster, like a classic New England steamed lobster, or give me like, you know, ginger scallion lobster at Haikang. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know that, like, having had a proper lobster thermidor, I'm like, I understand what people like about this. It's kind of a retro dish like from the 50s and 60s, but like, I'm cool. Like, lobster and breadcrumbs, like stuffed in the shell, it's not that, what could have been a standout just kind of got lost in for me, like in everything else. And I'm not sure I'd order it again.
Yeah. You know, let's not forget about the bread, and butter service that we had. I think it was 126-year-old sourdough starter. There were several breads. I remember that one specifically.
Yeah. There was a brioche and there was that crazy sourdough with the generational starter.
Which was fantastic. The butter, forget what was in the butter, but it was fantastic. We had a soup, some sort of a soup that I remember liking.
He's doing a bouillabaisse, kind of that classic French seafood stew.
Yes.
With lobster tail, scallops, clams, fish, and mussels. It's, you know, again, like, you know, my brain always goes to Philippe Schmidt's like spicy bouillabaisse, like that curried bouillabaisse that he used to do at his various restaurants. And again, like, and it was good. And especially as it gets colder, like, you know, a bouillabaisse is so comforting. But, you know, again, like, I think you're right. Like, having sampled that menu so broadly, I think I could just do like a seafood tower, a risotto, maybe that beet and burrata salad, even though that's like, it's cliche, but it's popular for a reason. It's always delicious.
Mm-hmm.
A steak, and then, you know, a side, and then dessert. And I would be very content. And that would be, still an expensive meal, still a nice meal, but not nearly as like crazy overkill as what we did when we went to Leo's.
Yeah, no. There was that potato dish too. It was like 100 layers of potatoes. That was very good. Would definitely, you know me.
Yeah, the potato dauphinois.
I compare every potato to Andiron's potatoes. And so now my standard of, is it better than Andiron's potatoes?
Is it better than the Palm Inn and Andiron? Nothing is better. Nothing is better than the Palm Inn and Andiron.
It was a close second.
It's a close second. All right. Anything else about Leo's River Oaks?
I'm looking forward to going back. You know, sometimes we're visiting places and I kind of know while I'm there, like, let's soak it in because I'm not going to go back simply because we try so many restaurants and there's just a long list. But people ask me too, you know, where would you return to? And that's definitely on my list. I'd love to go for happy hour, you know, just listen to the piano, sit and have a martini, a beautiful martini on the menu. And the vibe itself, I'd love to go catch a movie. I mean, and we should say too, I mean, there's a separate bar inside of the movie theater also run by Culinary Concepts with its own kind of food menu. So I think that kind of dinner and a movie that they're setting up there just kind of nailed it. I really like what Omar Khan is doing in general. I've really liked working with him in the past. And I like that the restaurant groups he's taken over and kind of taken his knowledge of cinema and feeding from Star Cinema into kind of more fine dining in Houston. And I think he's just done such a good job at the concepts that he's taken over and renovated. So props to him.
Yeah, I admit I had some initial skepticism around this restaurant because, you know, I like Liberty Kitchen, I like State Fair, but they're not places that I choose to dine at very often. And so, they're going to do fine dining, but then they hired Tim. I've liked Tim's food in the past. This is very well executed. It's very cohesive. It all flows together. It has a sense of occasion about it. This was a really nice restaurant. And as we were leaving, I like texted a couple people. I'm like, you're going to want to try this. Like if you haven't been here yet, if this isn't on your radar, you're going to want to eat here. Cause I know how much you like, I know how much you like oysters and cold seafood. I know how much you like a good steak. I know how much you like a really great sourdough. And so I all of those things kind of taken together, I think are reasons that people will want to seek out this restaurant.
Yeah. I can already tell it's going to be on my maybe top 10 this year.
Absolutely. All right. And then just briefly, I want to talk about Mandola's Deli. This is a Houston classic, bona fide Houston classic in the East End. Monica, of course, we should say that you are related to
there may be some bias here.
Yeah, yeah. There's no objectivity
editorial
here.
Editorial bias.
Yeah, you are related to the owners of this restaurant. They encouraged you to come by with me for lunch. And let me just say, like, I'm familiar with Mandola's Deli. I've been there a couple of times over the years. It's relatively close to where I live, so it's kind of in that, you know, if I want like a sandwich for lunch, you know, it's an Uber Eats option. But I don't know that I had explored the menu very deeply. And so we definitely made up for that when we went to Mandola's Deli recently.
Yeah. And, you know, and again, as you said, this is my family's deli that's, you know, been in that area for over 40 years and has always kind of been in the East End, a place that locals would go. Lots of strong ties to University of Houston being just down the road. So, you know, when we initially started talking about this, and I think it was before, you know, Chris Shepherd recently visited for his show, you know, Eat Like Local. And you and I were kind of having conversations at the same time about me bringing you by. And then the show actually ended up airing. So the week we went was the week after the show aired. And, you know, and I go pretty often. I mean, it's my family's restaurant. And it was the first time I had to park not in the parking lot. I had to park in another spot and, you know, kind of walked in and saw several of my family members who aren't typically in the restaurant behind the counter. And to someone that maybe doesn't go as often as I do, that wouldn't have looked any different, but very busy crowd. Every table was taken up. And it was just kind of really cool for me to see that, you know, on a Friday at lunch, a full deli, long line. And obviously I was very excited to share, you know, a lot of these dishes with you. They were excited for you to be there and, you know, experience some of these dishes for the first time. Some you had already had, but
right. Yeah. Like I go there and basically get either a meatball. If I call it a sub, they're going to get mad at me. They call them po' boys, right? Yeah. A meatball po' boy or a chicken parm po' boy. And so we got to do a few things that were a little bit more unusual. You know, we had a muffaletto, which I admit is not unusual. It's exactly the kind of sandwich that you would expect to get at Mandola's Deli. We did the spaghetti and meatballs instead of the meatball sub, which, you know, that kind of classic Italian-American red sauce, a little on the sweet side. But the meatballs are just so good. They're a good size. They've got a nice depth of flavor to them. You know, the surprise for me was that sausage and faccia di vecchia appetizer, which is kind of a sausage and peppers thing, but also with like the focaccia bread. That's a really nice starter.
And that's a family dish for us. I mean, growing up, every holiday we had focch. I mean, in that focch recipe specifically. So it is very nostalgic to me. And I think I mentioned this to you too. I typically always get a bowl of spaghetti meatballs when I go to Mandola's just because that's the recipe that my family grew up eating, whether or not you like it or not. When you're nostalgic for something you grew up eating, that's what I taste. When I taste other spaghetti and meatballs, I'm comparing it to that because that's what I grew up eating. So it's always kind of a side when I go there. It's like, we always have spaghetti meatballs for Thanksgiving. We have it for, you know, Christmas. It's just always a side for us. So I think trying it there, and I love bringing non-Italians to the deli, who know a lot about food, because it's an interesting juxtaposition of, oh, y'all make it this way. And it's like, whatever the way is, it to me, nostalgic, this is the way it's supposed to be. So that was really fun for me.
Well, and also, like, we just don't have that kind of casual Italian deli in Houston, right? These are very common on the East Coast, right? New York, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, whatever. You know, these restaurants are everywhere. Yeah. And they just don't really exist in Houston. So to have one, you know, that's, you know, again, like, if you're downtown, if you're in Midtown, if you're in Third Ward, obviously, if you're in the East End, this is a very convenient option for you, and the sandwiches are really good. And then they do kind of goofy stuff like fried lasagna bites, right? Like nobody needed to make lasagna and then batter and fry it. But is it gooey and delicious? Like of course it is. Like, you know, just like you're either one of those person who hears the words fried lasagna bites and you're like, yes please, or you have a different reaction. And if you have a different reaction, we probably can't be friends.
Yeah, well, and don't miss the sausage. I know we had some sausage and peppers, and that's a good dish there. And I will say too, They do a ton of catering. I mean, this is a fast casual. If you don't want to cook for a birthday party, I mean, we do a like we're always getting a tray of po' boys or a tray of lasagna. They'll do spaghetti and meatballs, and you can just get the suga and the meatballs there and boil your own spaghetti, which is a really nice family style option. I mean, you know, I think in the late 90s, early 2000s, you had these like family style Italian restaurants that were like opening Buca di Beppo and all these things. Like, that's really originally how we eat. So I think, you know, looking at it as not just an eat-in restaurant, but like knowing that they've got these options to kind of bring those things home and share them with, you know, family and special celebrations. It's just a really special place to me, and I was really glad to bring you there.
Yeah, no, and I'm glad that you extended that invite because it had been a while since I had been physically in the restaurant, and you kind of soak in that nostalgia with all the memorabilia on the walls and just like how kind of, rustic the whole setting is. And like you said, like the crowd didn't read as anything unusual. It just read as like a busy Friday lunch.
Yeah.
So, and they handled it well. Like, it's not like it took our food a super long time to come out or anything like
Yeah,
that.
no, they're great. They're great. So definitely reach out to me if you want to go by, and I'm happy to go by with anybody and take you to meet my family.
All right. Well, Monica, I'm going to say that does it for the restaurants of the week. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Eric.
That's it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. Join me on Thursday when we'll have a surprise guest.